Well, good morning, church. It's good to be here with you today, this morning, as we continue our series through Advent, today lighting the candle of peace. There's so much that I love about the Christmas season, right? Like the Christmas carols, the time with family and friends, shopping for a Christmas tree with my dad, making sugar cookies with my mom. You drive through the streets and you see the Christmas lights and maybe the neighbors bringing plates of cookies to each other's homes, and it can all be so good. And feel kind of like a bit like being in a movie, right? Again, and truly, I do love all of that, but that sometimes isn't the whole story, right? And I have to be honest with you, this sermon was a tough one for me this week, as I wrestled with what to share about this morning, reading through different passages that talk about peace. It felt like I was also being bombarded with headlines, news stories, and social media posts about things like the continued war in Ukraine and the thousands of children being killed in Gaza, and the countless other stories of war and conflict, unrest, broken communities, broken homes, and struggling individuals. We look around and see the world struggling with peace, and we look inwards and ourselves are struggling with peace. So how can we talk about a Prince of Peace? And all this brought to mind the old Christmas carol, "I Heard the Bells on Christmas Day." In the third verse, Henry Longfellow writes, "And in despair I bowed my head. There is no peace on earth, I said. For hate is strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men." I reread those lyrics and I thought, like, yeah, like, I get it. That's what it can so easily feel like. You look around at the world around you, and in big ways and in little ways, we get this sense of this isn't the way it's supposed to be. Ben, do you want me to switch to the other microphone? So that's an annoying ring the whole time. Is this better? That'll work. Those words that Henry Longfellow wrote, "There is no peace on earth," I said, he wrote those words in 1863, so over 150 years ago. Earlier that year, he had tragically lost his wife after his dress caught on fire, and he was badly burned trying to save her, but was too late. Shortly after that, his son left home and signed up to fight in the Civil War, and later was injured in battle, leaving him nearly paralyzed. So as a widowed father of six children in a country at war with itself, he wrote this poem on Christmas morning, seeking to capture the dynamic and the dissonance in his own heart and the world that he observed around him. He heard the bells that Christmas day and the singing of peace on earth, but he observed the world of injustice and violence that seemed to mock the truthfulness of this optimistic outlook. And this was in 1863, but could that not be written today? As the song continues, Longfellow points us to the hope that God is not dead, and I hope that by the end of this morning, we will also come to trust in the hope that we have and celebrate this Christmas. But I feel like I need to be honest about where I'm coming from today. It's no fun to talk about despair at Christmas, but I trust that God can handle our hearts and the things that we're feeling. And it's okay to bring those to him today. So if you find yourself in a similar space today as you experience the dissonance of celebrating Christmas and seeing the state of the world around us, that's okay. It's okay for it to feel complicated. I think some of the challenges that when it feels complicated like this, it can be easy for this lack of peace or this like dissonance to really start to come in close and cloud our vision. And it can be tough to see past and can really become almost suffocating. And so to help us try to see past what's right in front of our faces today, we're going to take a bit of a journey and try to get up to like a 10,000-foot level and look through the biblical story of peace and see what God is up to and what he has to say about it. Okay, so can we jump in together? If you were here about a month ago, Pastor Dan, in our series through Galatians, talked a bit about peace, and he gave us some context. In the New Testament, the word translated peace is eirene. And the word that we're maybe more familiar with in the Old Testament Hebrew, shalom. Pastor Dan explained that it's more than just an absence of conflict and war, but includes right relationships in every area, with God, with neighbor, and with the earth. It's more holistic to include things like just economic relations, the fair division of land so that all families can earn their way, and the release of debts so that the extremes of wealth and poverty don't develop, and more. The Bible Project talks about peace as not just the absence of conflict, but that it also points to the presence of something better in its place. It defines shalom as complete or whole. Shalom refers to something that is complex with lots of pieces that's in a state of completeness. It can also refer to a person's well-being. The core idea is that life is complex, full of moving parts and relationships and situations, and when any of these is out of alignment or missing, your shalom breaks down. Life is no longer whole, and it needs to be restored. So we could say then that the opposite of shalom, or the opposite of peace, is chaos, a complete disordering of the way that things are supposed to be. And that's where the story starts. In Genesis 1, the very beginning of the Bible, the first two verses say, "In the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. Now the earth was formless and empty. Darkness was over the surface of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the waters." The earth was formless and empty. The word here translated to formless is also used elsewhere in Scripture as emptiness, confusion, wasteland, wilderness, or a place of chaos. God's original vision for our world was one of peace, or shalom. And his first act of creation was to enter into chaos and create peace. One writer that I read referred to God's peace as a disruptive peace. Like, he disrupted the chaos and created a world at peace. We then see an account of Eden, and we get this glimpse of God's vision for what the world was supposed to be, a world at peace. This is God's vision for peace. When we look around at our world today and we cry out to God, "This isn't the way it's supposed to be," I hear him saying back, "I know." The way he created it was a world of peace, people living together in peace with each other, in peace with God, and in peace with creation. Like, that is God's vision for peace. This was the way it was supposed to be. So what happened? Like, many of us will know the story of Adam and Eve in Eden, and the problem started when we decided to make our own way. Adam and Eve didn't fully trust in God's goodness, so they disobeyed and ate of the fruit that they weren't supposed to. The prophet Isaiah, where we're going to spend a lot of our time today, later describes a similar situation that the people of Israel find themselves in, and he sums it up well for us. So in the beginning of Isaiah, the beginning of his book, he writes this. It says, "Hear me, you heavens, listen, earth, for the Lord has spoken. I reared children and brought them up, but they have rebelled against me. The ox knows its master, the donkey its owner's manger, but Israel does not know. My people do not understand. Woe to the sinful nation, a people whose guilt is great, a brood of evildoers, children given to corruption. They have forsaken the Lord. They have spurned the Holy One of Israel and turned their backs on him." So if Act 1 of this story is God's vision for peace, then Act 2 would be the mess that we've made. Time and time again, throughout Scripture and throughout history, this is the story that we see. We see God's offer of peace, and we think that we can come up with something better for ourselves. We reject his peace for our own. We turn our backs on God and his ways, thinking in our arrogance that we have a better plan for how things are supposed to be. And this first leads to dissonance inside us personally. Like, our personal lives get disordered. There was a specific design to how we were supposed to flourish, and we reject that, and we go our own way, and so we feel this disorder in our personal lives. And then we grow up feeling like we don't even know ourselves or understand why we feel the way that we do or think the way that we do. We give more time to the things that don't matter as much or don't actually benefit us or the things that God has called us to, and less time on things that are actually significant, and we just end up feeling more tired, more anxious, more frustrated, and more out of control. God has designed us for peace, for shalom, for wholeness, and repeatedly we turn our backs on him. And when our personal lives are disordered, then we see our relationships become disordered. We trust less, we fight more, we hold on to bitterness and unforgiveness. And when our relationships are disordered, then we see our systems and organizations become disordered. There's fighting and injustice and inequality, and no more for the good of all people, but rather every person for themselves. We get caught up in this rat race and do whatever we can to get myself ahead. And if I don't look after me and my people, then who is? But we don't think about the cost. And then when our systems and our organizations are disordered, then we see that our relationship with creation becomes disordered. There's destruction and selfishness and apathy. And eventually, we take a look around and all we can do is scream out, "This isn't the way that it's supposed to be. This isn't the way that it's supposed to be." Longfellow's words, "And in despair I bowed my head, there is no peace on earth, I said, for hate is strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men. This isn't the way it's supposed to be. And God says, you're right, I know. This isn't the way it's supposed to be. So Act 1, God's vision for peace. Act 2, the mess that we've made. It brings us to Act 3. And Jeannie read the verse earlier, Isaiah 9. It says, for unto us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. The prophet Isaiah was looking around at the kings of Israel and what the people were going through, and I think was probably saying something similar to, this isn't the way it's supposed to be as well. And the kings of Israel were supposed to lead their people into this kind of peace, this kind of shalom that we're talking about this morning. But this rarely ever happened. And so Isaiah looked forward to a future king, this prince of shalom, whose reign would bring shalom with no end, a time when God would make a covenant of shalom with his people and make right all wrongs and heal all that's broken. God chose to restore peace by entering into the chaos, again, similar to the way that he did in that creation account in Genesis. It can be easy to relate to the Jewish people who, when Jesus had his triumphal entry into Jerusalem, were expecting him to overthrow the government and turn everything on its head and take control of the situation. But we know that that's not what he did. And similarly, we read in Isaiah 9 that unto us the son is given and the government will be on his shoulders. And we think, okay, like here we go, right? But that's not, again, how Jesus operates. When Jesus begins his ministry, he goes into the synagogue on the Sabbath, and the scroll of the prophet Isaiah is given to him. And in this, we see the heart of Jesus' mission. In Isaiah 61, it reads, the Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim freedom for the captives and release from darkness for the prisoners, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor and the day of vengeance of our God, to comfort all who mourn and provide for those who grieve in Zion, to bestow on them a crown of beauty instead of ashes, the oil of joy instead of mourning, and a garment of praise instead of a spirit of despair. They will be called oaks of righteousness, a planting of the Lord for the display of his splendor. We see that the heart of Jesus is that we, the created, would be restored to the heart of our Creator. In this prophecy from Isaiah and in the ministry of Jesus, we see that God's heart is our peace and our shalom. I think we can easily come to this passage in Isaiah, in Isaiah 61, and we read it and immediately think, well, that's nice of Jesus for him to come and that he did that for those that are poor and brokenhearted and captive and imprisoned. We read that and think that it's for someone else, as if we aren't the poor, the brokenhearted, the captive, and the imprisoned. But what if all the disordering that Jesus came to fix is first the disordering that we each have in our own hearts? Before you spend too long looking around, we take a look within. So what areas of your heart feel poor? Jesus says, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. After we try to go our own way and turn our backs on God and try our own hand at creating wholeness and shalom for ourselves, we get to the end of that road and realize that really we don't have anything in us that can create that kind of shalom that we were made for. We can't do it on our own. And we have nothing to give that is worthy. Like, we're broke. But for those that are poor, Jesus has good news. What areas of your heart are feeling brokenhearted today? Maybe it's a relationship that's struggling or not going the way that you had hoped, or maybe it's a loss that you're grieving, or maybe it's because something that you've hoped for didn't come to be in the ways that you thought. In so many ways, we are brokenhearted because our hearts have been disconnected from the one that makes us whole. And so for those that are brokenhearted today, Jesus has come to make you whole. What areas of your heart are feeling captive or imprisoned? The more we strive after shalom on our own, it's like this drug whose hit maybe feels good for a bit but doesn't last. And so we go back to that drug again and again and again, hoping that one day it will fill that hole that we're so desperate to fill. We get addicted to our reputation or our things or our influence or our relationships, and we become captive to them, clinging as tightly as we can because we've put all our marbles in that basket for the way that we think we'll finally experience this shalom. And the further we go down that road, the tighter we hold on. But for those that are captive, Jesus offers freedom. he offers release. The Spirit of the Sovereign Lord is on me, because the Lord has anointed me to proclaim good news to your poverty. He has sent me to bind up your broken heart, to proclaim freedom for the areas keeping you captive, and release from darkness for your imprisonment. And the hope is that this will reverse that downward spiral that we talked about earlier. As Jesus heals the disorder in our personal lives and brings peace and shalom to our personal lives, he will heal the disorder in our relationships and bring peace and shalom to our relationships. And then that he will heal the disorder in our systems and organizations and bring shalom and peace to our systems and organizations. And that as that happens, he will heal the disorder in our relationships with creation and bring peace and shalom to our relationship with creation. First, he works in me, and then he works through me. First, shalom in me, then shalom through me. Like, first, peace in me, then peace through me. And some of the challenges that we find ourselves in the middle, we're still in the middle of this process, right? Like yes, Jesus came to set all things right, to restore shalom to a broken world and to our broken parts, and he did that. When he came and lived and ministered and died and defeated death and rose again, he did that for you and me. And he is still continuing to set right and to reorder our lives and our world. He did it, and he continues to do it. We started in Genesis, so we might as well go all the way to the end of Revelation. In Revelation 21, we see the end of the story. We see God's vision for peace again. In Revelation 21, it says, "Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away.' He who is seated on the throne said, 'I am making everything new.'" When our hearts cry out, "This isn't the way it's supposed to be," God calls back, "I know, and I am making everything new." This is the challenge of living in that in-between. When I look inside myself and see the disordered parts of my heart longs for that everything new. It longs for that peace, for that shalom. When I look at the challenges and the relationships around me, my heart longs for that everything new, that peace, that shalom. When I read articles about the children dying in Gaza or the injustice and racism and discrimination in our world, my heart longs for that everything new, for peace and shalom. When I hear about a 12-year-old boy living in foster care whose home got attacked in Ukraine and is now in the hospital trying to survive, my heart longs with everything in me for that everything new, for that peace and that shalom. In so many ways, my heart longs for that everything new, for peace and shalom. And it's so hard to be in that in-between space, but I don't believe that we are without hope. So where do we start? I believe that the first place that we can start is by responding to the invitation to have a relationship with Jesus. This is the only place we can start. Like, we've done enough trying to figure it out on our own. That passage at the beginning of Isaiah says that the people had turned their back on God. So we have to start by turning back around and facing him, trusting that his heart is for our peace and for our shalom. And so if you're here or listening and haven't made that decision, please come talk to one of us on staff. Like, we would love to hear your story and walk with you. Second, I believe that the invitation is to be honest and let God into that disorder that is in our hearts. The areas where we are poor, brokenhearted, captive, imprisoned. Let him proclaim good news to our poverty. Let him bind up our broken hearts. Let him bring freedom to our captivity. He wants you to be whole. He wants your shalom. And third, we bring community around us and into our story. We don't have to do this alone. As we allow others to walk with us and as we walk with others, we can be a part of bringing God's reordering to the brokenness around us. And the more that we can individually experience God's shalom, his peace for each of us, let's be attentive to how he might be inviting us to be a part of bringing peace to the relationships around us, to our systems and our organizations, and to our relationship with creation. It's okay to look out at the world and look at the world around us and lament, this isn't the way it's supposed to be. I think that it's really important that we do cry out about that. We long for shalom and we pray for shalom. We can share our frustrations and our despair about it with God. That's a totally valid thing to feel and to do. And if that's where you find yourself today, I'm right there with you. There is space enough inside our hearts to hold both that longing for shalom and the faith that God is still at work and one day will restore his vision for peace for each of us individually and for all of creation. Longfellow writes in that poem, "And in despair I bowed my head. There is no peace on earth, I said, for hate is strong and mocks the song of peace on earth, goodwill to men." The next verse, "Then peal the bells more loud and deep. God is not dead, nor doth he sleep. The wrong shall fail, the right prevail. With peace on earth, goodwill to men." We're also going to sing the last verse of it as well. It says, "And Lord, haste the day when my faith shall be sight. The clouds be rolled back like a scroll. The trump shall resound, and the Lord shall descend. Even so, it is well with my soul." I invite you to stand and sing that with us today. God, it can be hard when we don't have all the answers.